Welcome to Miller Kane, A True and Exact History, a serialized novel by Samuel Ligon, published for the first time in The Inlander and broadcast by Spokane Public Radio. Miller Kane is made possible by Sprint and The Inlander. Previously on Miller Kane, somehow Connor found them, tracked them to the Pendleton Roundup. Yes, Connor, 8-year-old Carlene's estranged father, and the reason Miller Kane and Carlene have been on the run all summer. Thankfully, they made their getaway unseen, back on the road, leaving their friends Avery, Monica, and little Bella behind. Miller, who's used to a life on the road, is using the time to return to a long-ignored writing assignment, a series of profiles of famous Americans for a history textbook. But so far, Miller's editor George hasn't appreciated the literary license he's taken. A quick warning, this episode does include descriptions of sexual activity and may not be appropriate for all audiences. Now, here's author Samuel Ligon.
Chapter 6, Part 5. And then he couldn't drive anymore, everything blurring outside his windshield. He pulled over and parked in the same rest area near Twin Falls where he'd stopped on his way home from Rosedale all those months ago on his way to pick up Carlene on the peninsula. He'd been so confident in his ability to rescue her then. All he had to do was pick her up, get on the road, and stay ahead of Connor. But now... Jesus, he didn't know what to do or where to go, and Connor wouldn't stop coming. Worse, both Miller and Carlene were wearing out, when they hadn't even left the Northwest yet. He went around to her side of the motorhome and unbuckled her seatbelt, her arms reaching around his neck as he lifted her. He carried her through the side door and up to her loft above the front seats, her face marked with lines from the fabric she'd been sleeping against. He put pajamas into her hands, which she changed into, eyes closed, before flopping onto her bed. Miller walked back to his room, flopping onto his bed as hard as Carlene had, and when he woke hours later, it was still black and silent just before dawn, probably. He checked his phone. 20 minutes had gone by. He could hear the faint stream of cars on the interstate in the western night. His phone buzzed with another text from Monica, and he texted back how sorry he was to have left like that. Maybe Miller and Carlene would find a permanent place, and Bella and Monica would join them or at least visit. Connor would have to give up at some point, wouldn't he? And Lizzie would get out of jail at some point, too. Surely that would be best for everyone. Miller opened his notebook. George had hated the last two hero villains, had hated them all, probably, but Miller thought they were more true and accurate than anything he'd ever written. He and Carlene would write them together. There'd be a market for that, a fake father-daughter team rewriting American history. Avery would get involved, too, and Monica. It was funny how far he felt from Lizzie. He'd loved her forever, but now she seemed to be fading, and not because of Monica. It had more to do with Carlene somehow, but he didn't know how or why exactly. Maybe there wasn't a reason. It made him feel guilty, her rotting in jail like that, while he and Carlene were out here free, sort of. He uncapped his pen and started to write. Hero Villain 6. Rose Kennedy and Buffalo Bill, an American love story. Yes, there were others, Ma Barker and Annie Oakley and Eleanor Roosevelt and Kit Carson and Nancy Davis, later Reagan, and what they said about her was true, all of it. But it was Rose, mostly, even with that awful husband of hers, Joe, giving the lie to Sylvia Plath's line about every woman adoring a fascist. Because Rose hated Joe. It was Buffalo Bill she loved and the litter of Kennedy dolls he sired. And it was Rose Buffalo Bill loved, though there were thousands of others. Amelia Earhart and P.T. Barnum and Calamity Jane and Curious George Custer. But mostly it was Rose, at the Plaza, the Heathman, the Biltmore, the Drake, in Bill's tent, Bill's train car, at the ranch in Nebraska, and the compound on Cape Cod, where they cultivated those unbearable accents. Bill wanted to have Joe whacked. Dino would do it. But Rose said no, and Bill would do anything for Rose, except that thing Meatloaf also wouldn't do, the unnameable, the unknowable. Perhaps you've learned what you know about sex from the internet or in health class, useful information regarding condoms and periods. Perhaps your parents gave you a book or a friend enlightened you late at night. But whatever you know and whatever you do, you should be doing it often, even if it wears you out and reminds you of death, which famous writers think about all the time. Sex and death and sex in the moon if you're a poet. For Hemingway, it was sex and death and sex and food and wine and sex and bulls and fishing. But not for George and Martha. Not for Abe and Mary Todd or Nancy and Ronnie or Dick and Pat Nixon, for whom the loving never stopped. Dick and Pat, Tallahassee log rolling in the Lincoln bedroom up to the very moment of Dick's resignation. Perhaps you'll succeed in love like these Americans, transcending death like Rose and Buffalo Bill. I will never allow myself to be vanquished or annihilated, Rose Kennedy said after four of her nine children had been annihilated and one, her namesake, lobotomized. She had 75 legitimate grandchildren, and nobody knows how many great-grandchildren, and somehow, through all that annihilation, she thrived because she was Honey Fitz's daughter, F. Scott's sister, the Kennedy doll's mother, America's grandmother, Catholic, but also a WASP, a pie baker and a homemaker, the best lover Buffalo Bill ever had, and he'd had them all, Milton Berle and Bonnie Parker and Mother Teresa and Joyce Heth, who Barnum introduced him to in 1835, claiming she was George Washington's 160-year-old mammy. Bill was as big a liar as Barnum was, the root of both men's heroic villainy, encouraging Americans to call out fraud and feel smarter than we ever actually were. Because we knew Joyce Heth wasn't really Washington's mammy, that the Fiji mermaid wasn't really a mermaid, that Buffalo Bill never really rode with the Pony Express or spied for the Union Army. Seeing truth through the lie felt like uncovering a secret, like we weren't always at the mercy of forces beyond our control, like we were finally on the inside. People have tried forever to hide what's really going on. Your parents, for example, right this minute, with each other, yes, but also with your bus driver and the mean lunch lady and the nice lunch lady and your piano teacher. Perhaps you're familiar with Occam's razor, the idea that simple solutions are more likely than complex ones, that most things are as they seem, your parents doing what they do, and your grandparents too, and their grandparents, and Adam and Eve, and their neighbors, and your French teacher, and the janitorial staff, and your cross-country coach, and all the gym teachers with each other always, but nobody more than Rose and Buffalo Bill. Cunning clover thimble, Gertrude Stein wrote. Cunning of everything. What you've heard about Alice B. Toklas is true. The pie, the whiskey, her deep fulfillment of Gertrude Stein. Cow come out and out and smell a little, Stein wrote. It's Occam's razor and Cleveland steamer, Pascal's wager and Emma's cleaver. It's Bill and Rose sitting in a tree, K-I-S-S-I-N-G. Little slam up, Gertrude Stein wrote, cold seam peaches. It's Sam the Butcher. Do you know the rest of that one? Have you heard the good part? A fat Clemenza, Rose said. An Omaha plowboy, Buffalo Bill said. The bruise knuckled knock of me, Nance Van Winkle said. Sex and death and sex and massacres, too. Is it possible the shooters wouldn't be shooters if they knew what Rose and Buffalo Bill knew, or if they worried less about not knowing? All we know is that Rose's husband, Joe, would not stop coming after them. They could hardly stay a step ahead. The reason Bill invented the Wild West in the first place, all that horse crap and gun smoke, until finally Joe caught them and killed them both, deader than hell, with his bruised, knuckled hands. But that's not true. That's not possible. This is a love story, not a massacre. Rose and Bill sitting in a tree, K-I-S-S-I-N-G, wrapped in each other's arms and the afterglow of American twilight forever.
You've been listening to Miller Kane, A True and Exact History, a novel by Samuel Ligon, published in weekly installments by The Inlander, with archived audio at SpokanePublicRadio.org/MillerKane. Our theme music is by Indian Goat. I'm your producer, Chris Messini. Join us next week for the latest episode of Miller Kane.